Welcome back into Flourish FM, folks. We're happy to have you back. Today, we are proceeding with our next installment of our special series on anti-fragility, and we've got an awesome conversation with Bob Goulet. Known Bob for several years at this point. Really, really amazing man and an amazing story. We'll get into a bit during the episode. Bob will talk a bit about his upbringing, how tragedy sort of struck during his time in the Naval Academy and ultimately landed him into Florida State Penitentiary for multiple years. He then went on to earn his bachelor's degree, his MBA in chemical engineering, and then, of course, his MBA. He became a two-time Inc. 300 CEO. He is a devoted, loving, and caring father as well, and just really an all-around interesting guy. So Bob's got an amazing story, a lot of knowledge and reflection and insight, I think, to provide on anti-fragility and anti-fragile living. He also does one-on-one private coaching and has a great book, a really memoir with some of these insights and philosophies. So if you're interested in Bob's approach and ways of thinking, we've got various ways to connect with him after the show. So here it is. We hope you enjoy our conversation on anti-fragility and parenting, business success, and life in general with Bob Goulet. Let's start here. Obviously, I wanted to talk to you for a variety of very specific reasons, but the one that is kind of front and center in my mind when I think about this topic of anti-fragility is, since I've known you, you have in some way, shape, or form said to me that you feel you are meant to, or maybe destined to, or it's just sort of your lot in life to have to like do really hard shit.
Yeah. Seems like I throw myself into really hard shit. It's where I find purpose. I find without something really hard, I vacillate. And so to my detriment at times, I create situations that make it hard. And then I'm like, okay, good. Now we have something to do, you know, but it seems like it really seems that way. I thrive in those hard situations and I vacillate when things get easy. And it's bizarre, right? Because as I've moved on in my life, I mean, you know, I've been pretty successful. And as success has come, it's a whole lot easier to take it easy. I don't take it easy very well. My son always jokes with me, I have no idea how to chill. He's like, well, just chill, Dad. And I'm like, but why? And all joking aside, I mean, I've gotten better at that. But yeah, I do think that I need hard. I think, I don't know if you want to segue into this piece, but it's a piece I've really started to understand about myself. If I don't stay on top of me, what happens is I drift back into some darker places. I read an interview with Lenny Kravitz the other day, and it really struck me because I'm a Lenny Kravitz fan, but he said, you know, I find myself in darkness a lot, but I've learned that if I take care of myself every day and I do my work, I can stay in a better place. And that kind of epitomizes my life. I've got to do that work. And I think when I have something hard, then it's just, I'm doing my work, right? Because I'm just constantly like, okay, I've got stuff to do. And the more I don't have that, I struggle. And what I've really started to learn is I've really got to do that work every day, even when I don't have something big and audacious to work on, right? And so to your whole theme of anti-fragility, I've thought a lot about it when we talked about doing this interview, and that's really the thing, you know, it's, am I doing my work every day? Who am I being? Because I think way too often, and even in my case, I created these really hard situations so that I would step up, but I was still sort of letting the situation dictate who I was being, right? Because now the situation's hard, so I'm going to be tough and I'm going to be resourceful and I'm going to do all this stuff. And when the situation's not hard, I'm sort of a slacker. Not just a slacker in what I'm doing, but a slacker on my personal work, on taking care of me. And so what I've learned in the easier times is that I really have to stay on that more so. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. I have a question for you because we were chatting with another guest, Peter Goldstein, and I brought up this distinction I see, and I believe Paul Bloom's work in The Sweet Spot, the distinction between suffering and chosen suffering. And I wonder if you might add a third category where, like, yeah, doing hard stuff. But what I think I'm hearing is that for the most part, you're choosing, maybe sometimes accidentally putting yourself into situations where hard stuff, which I'm sure we'll get into. But do you see that as like experientially different, what you're choosing to engage in versus what is sort of a matter of happenstance, if you will?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I don't really believe a whole lot in happenstance. I believe in lots of things are presented to us, right? I think you actually turned me on to one point on the concept of the research around luck.
Yeah, Richard right? Wiseman. Yeah, the luck factor.
Richard Wiseman, right? Yeah. And I mean, his first piece of it, right, is jump in, right? Jump into what's presented, you know? And I think that's such a key, right? So many of the things in my life have been presented and I jumped. Sometimes I jumped into things that were a train wreck, you know, let's be honest. And that had more to do with who I was being. But, you know, a great story, when I had built my company, we were super successful. I think we had just won our first Inc. 500 award. And a guy that had helped us all along, he had helped us. He works for the packaging company. He was actually the president of the company who came by in the very early days when I was nobody. I didn't know how to pack a box or pack a pallet. I had to get somebody to go, how do you do this? Like, how do you think about how it goes on a truck, how many you fit on a truck, how you package it, because it was traveling to another country. And we were packing out tractor trailers every day. Anyways, he comes by much later and he brings some associates, you know, and he says, this guy, you know, this is a great story. So I started to tell the story. And I realized at the end of this story, there were so many people and so many things that had presented themselves. And I just jumped on it. He was one of them. Like, he just all along, and all those little things culminated in a company that went kind of ballistic. We ended up selling off. But the story was, I was just about out of business, right? Somebody calls and says, oh, I got this idea. You want to help us? And I was like, I'm broke. If you got a paycheck, I mean, if you got a checkbook, I'm solid. Let's go. And that thing turned into a multi-million-dollar business and 30 or 40 patents around the world. And if you had told me or asked me in 2010, do you think you'll make your living building exhaust insulation for big trucks? I'd have been, what's exhaust insulation? I got no idea. Like, I don't even know what this is, right? There's two ways to look at life, right? You're going to pick this thing you think you have to have, or you just sort of live fully in everything that presents itself. And somehow it seems to work out. I've never really had a big picture of where I was going.
So there's interesting, you know, I made the connection earlier to my conversation with Peter. And one of the things we, I think, highlighted was a sense of optimism, hope, and embracing what is, right? Or in some ways, accepting. Right. What is as kind of these like core behaviors, right? That I think he felt like were really central to his most kind of anti-fragile moments, if you will, resilient moments. And it sounds like it's the same case with you, and shouldn't be surprising. Like those are hallmarks of resilient, right? Growing from adversity sort of behavior. But I just wondered if those resonate with you. Optimism, take the swing, have a go, it can get better, hope. Develop strategies, embrace what is.
Yeah, embrace what is right there, right? But not just embrace it. You know, I think my favorite question is, what can I do right now with what I have, where I am, to massively elevate my experience? You know, you talked about my son. So often I watch young people, right? You know, when the big happy is going to happen, when I make this $1 million, when I get the Ferrari, when I make the big leagues, whatever it is, right? When it's, as you know, I mean, I did 3.5 years in a maximum security prison. And when I look back at that period in my life, I was flourishing, right? I got a 2-year college degree. I worked under some amazing chefs, because a lot of chefs end up in prison, unfortunately, right? I worked under some amazing chefs, learned how to cook, right? I was in crazy shape. I was running 530 miles, right? Benching 315. I mean, that was crazy, right? I mean, I had these boundaries. And most people look at that situation and go, I'm going to get high, I'm going to lay around, and I'm going to bitch about the man. right? And I'm going to wait till my time's up. And I look at that period and hundreds, thousands of times I ask myself, how did I flourish in that period? How did I thrive? Why? What happened? There are plenty of periods since I've been out when I can look at a year or 3 year period and go, didn't really do much, nothing really amazing about this 3 years of a life. And I'm like, you know, and so I think that really goes back to it all. It's the situation, but so often we're focused on the big happy someday, right? Something's going to happen that's going to make this all right. You know, something's going to change this. And I think if we spent a whole lot more time every day going, what do I need to do? Who do I need to be to elevate the experience exactly where I am with what I got right here? In prison, it was, that's what I did. I didn't have that question. I wasn't thinking that, but I filled every day. And when I walked away from that experience, you know, I was just in a much better space. I use that question almost every day when I journal these days, you know, and just like, great. You get to an interesting point. I'm 58 and, you know, I've sold the company. My son's off to college. You know, lots of people talk about retirement and I look at it and go, okay, what else do I want to do with this life? What do I want to experience? But you also start to face mortality, right? And you start to think about, okay, there's an end. What do I want? In my book, I talk about, what am I going to think when I take that last breath? You know, and that's what I think about. I'm like, it's almost always comes back to the same thing. It's who am I being, right? It's not what I accomplish. It's the stuff's irrelevant, right? The stuff comes and goes. But I think when I take that last breath, it's like, who have I been? Have I showed up? Have I embraced the situations? Have I been positive? You know, back to what the original question, right? Have I done the things, done is less of it. Have I been the person I want to be that I'm proud of, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's it, right? You know, I think if you really sit back and you say all the things you were talking about, right? Positivity, hope, faith, persistence, embracing the situation, right? If you can be that every day, when the end of the ride comes, I am hard pressed to believe you're going to look back and go, I wasted the journey.
Yeah. You're nailing, right? The self-care piece, the movement exercise piece. I hear mindset. I hear character and values and coherent living to that sense of value and character. I hear faith, meaning, purpose, right? And you and I have had these conversations and our, mm-hmm. our usual listeners will know, like, those are the hallmarks of a flourishing life in many ways, right? You reference these early experiences because what I'm really interested in is you've had, I think, periods in your life where those things have fueled you during, let's call them calm waters, but have also like fueled you or guided you in like very stormy seas as well, right? And I think navigating those and practicing those and the calm versus the stormy is a very, very like different experience, right? And I'm curious. We've talked about it in the past, the extent to which some of these early experiences, maybe you'd go all the way back to childhood, high school, obviously time spent in prison, which, you know, I'd like to get into a little bit more, sort of gave you opportunity to chisel some of these characteristics and come to some of these realizations. It's, I don't think you came upon them by just relaxed education and listening to podcasts and books. And you had, I think you've had some very lived experiences that have, like I said, chiseled away at kind of who you've become.
Yeah. Remember 58 years old back in the young days, it wasn't even Tony Robbins on an infomercial yet, you know, that hadn't even come. Right. And,
right,
and so,
right.
Yeah, tough childhood, tough dad. The back of his hand was, that was the use of discipline, right? You're off. And then when the tear came, it was wipe that shit off your face or I'll wipe that off your face too. So, you know, your early childhood was stay really small, stay in your box. But no question, right? Those were the beginning lessons of building some grit, right? So of, and those were, I look back now and I'm like, I don't wish it were any different. I hear lots of people say, oh, my childhood should be different. And I'm like, yeah, look, I got where I got. I mean, not to brag, but I mean, I got to the 0.1% in America success-wise, partially because I had a tough childhood, right? When we were working, I mean, I hear people all the time say, you know, well, we work 100 hours a week. I'm like, yeah, well, we were working like 125 hours a week. 6 hours of sleep was all you were allowed off. We did that for a year and a half, you know, and never once did I bitch about it. I was like, we're good. Like, just go, right? 5 hours of sleep, a shower on one side, and a quick food, and let's go. And, you know, I think those early experiences just bring you in, right? They start to build grit. Some people, they break. But I think with me, they, unfortunately for me, what they did was, and I picked it up from my old man, was I learned the escape route, right? And so drugs, alcohol, you know, so I learned you grind, and then you find something to escape. And so, you know, I think that was the tough part of that. But the great part about that was, you know, I started to build resilience. And, you know, my mom will tell you this story. At 14, I was working the tobacco fields, right? In the summer, you could go work the tobacco fields in Connecticut. And the bus would pick you up just like the school bus and take you out to the tobacco field. And for $2.25 an hour, you know, you worked out under these sweltering, Connecticut grows shade tobacco. You worked under these sweltering tents in the middle of the summer, picking suckers and picking tobacco leaves. But, you know, they told me if you want a car when you're 16, you buy one with your own money. Great. You know, so I would come home, and the rule was I had to drop all my clothes in the garage because I was so dirty I wasn't allowed in the house, and I had to go right to the shower, right? And I don't look back at that as tough. You know, I look back at that as, okay, if I can do this, when it came time in the Navy to wash pots, it never bugged me. You know, I was like, okay. I mean, a lot of times people have pushed me to get out of that. I thrive kind of in doing the dirty work. You know, I think it's noble. I think it grounds me. I still clean my house. You know, people will get a house cleaner, and I'm like, I don't know that that's me, right? Sometimes I just need to know what the hard work is. That's what that brought, you know. And through, I started my first company at 15. I was doing body work in my folks' garage. I started early. I was much more interested in working than hanging out. I'm sure there's reams of psychology books that can be written on all the issues I had.
Well, so I wasn't going to say that, but I am curious, you know, like some of these things you bring up, and we found, I think, it to be very similar with Peter, is natural disposition versus experiences that mold and shape that disposition a little differently. And it's, of course, it's hard to look back and know I was this way, and then this event made me this other way. Like, point well taken. You know, we can dig into the psychology of all that in a different space. But I think you've always struck me as like, you always had some grittiness and hard work to you. And maybe that was because of the tough upbringing, but maybe that's just sort of, you know, dispositionally, you're shaking your head. So you'll be able to tell us more. But then, you know, eventually, so, okay, you go to the Navy, you can or cannot share the story with us, but eventually end up in prison. And then I think you might say you started to develop a lot more systems, if you will, habits, routines. But I hear you also talking about mindset and perspective in there. And so I'm just curious as you kind of walk us through, you know, that period in your life and then shortly after, where you feel like some of this was just natural and some of this other stuff made me the way I am today. Like, you can see it very viscerally.
Oh, yeah. I think the work ethic was there. I absolutely didn't get it from my father. My mother worked hard, but I didn't really realize that at the time, because when my mom was working in my young childhood, women were just sort of going to work. You know, it wasn't really a common thing yet, you know, and mom worked at night and filed papers. It wasn't, you know, it was like, okay, she was the grit in the family, but I didn't realize that until years later. I think the work ethic was there. I think the propensity for darkness or depression was there. I think that was just the way it is. You know, I look back. You and I have talked a bunch about it. I mean, I spend a lot of time reading about genetics and epigenetics and, you know, kind of all the chemistry and, you know, how we show up in this very moment is a lot of stuff, right? I mean, it's just a lot of stuff. And so I think the work ethic, I think propensity for, we'll call it sort of an emotional home, was there. I think all the experiences are what start to help you take that you're given and decide what you're going to do with that, right? Because hard work ethic can turn out to be a great drug dealer, or a hard work ethic can turn out to be an entrepreneur. Sure. And develop a bunch of patents, sure. Right? I used to say, oh, I'm just a hard worker, but that was wired, you know? Like, I mean, I had that. My mom says, we didn't need the money, and I wanted the biggest paper route that made the most money, and I collected 3 times a week back then, you know? Like, I didn't even want to spend it. I just wanted it, you know, like I saved it all. Like there's nothing I wanted at the time, you know. But I think the tough times, the really tough times, the beatings, the times when, you know, it was really hard at home, I mean, that started to hone something, you know. And then I think to your point of resilience and, you know, anti-fragile, right? That started to build this thing, okay, I can use that work. When my life really ran off the tracks and I did end up in prison, I mean, that's when the big awakening came. There was no way for me to sit in this place and go, never did I ever dream I would end up here, and go, okay, something doesn't work, right? This ain't working well. What just happened and the tragedy I caused doesn't work. And I think that's when I just, it was like the shell got smashed open and I was completely unprepared for it. But in the same token, I was completely open. And I think one last thing to add on natural, I've been curious since I could speak, right? I mean, it was always, why is this work? Why isn't that the way? How does this happen? You know, I mean, I remember as a young kid walking out to the car and my dad had opened the hood and I'm like, how does that thing work? And he didn't know. And I was disappointed. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, we don't know how that works. So the curiosity was always there. And I think that turned to when life got really hard, the curiosity, the work ethic were the backbone of what helped. And the mindset, I guess, you know, and I never considered myself, I don't ever consider myself optimistic, right? But I do consider myself, I have faith. I have faith that there's a reason I'm here and that I have a responsibility to do the most I can with this gift of life. And so I keep working at it, you know, and there are plenty of days I'd love to, I don't even know. I think there are days when I thought about giving up, you know, and then I just realized it's not an option. You know, it's like, okay, we just got to keep going. I know a great story that, you know, I think I've told you before. When I got out of prison, I had a high school diploma, right? And I got out of prison and I decided after cooking for a few years, I'm like, I need to do something really hard, right? To your point, right? I'm going to be a chemical engineer, right? Can I find like the hardest damn curriculum to go chase? So I go to the community college and they just give you a placement test, not whether to get in or not, but basically to say, where are you really? And then they come back and they say, you're like a 10th grade math education and you have 11th grade English education. So you've got a lot of work to do to be a high school graduate, actually. And then they, but I have a diploma. Well, who cares, right? So it took 6 semesters for me to become a freshman in college. Mm-hmm. And I just was like, that was also an amazing experience for me, right? Because I had a piece of paper that said I was supposed to be able to do something, but I wasn't able to do it. I wasn't. When somebody put a piece of paper in front of me, I couldn't do it. And so high school diploma or not, who cares, right? And so yeah. I was like, okay, I got to do this work. So I show up at college and I crush it. Right. I mean, I graduate with, you know, a 3.78 in chemical engineering. But if I had jumped in with my high school diploma, I'd have flunked out. I think that's the same when it comes to the things that we talk about, grit, about taking care of yourself, self-care, about your psychology, about how you keep working on this. Right. I think every year as I grow older, I realize I don't know that I have my high school diploma and living yet, figuring this thing out and enjoying it. You know, sometimes yeah. I'm jealous of people who seem to just casually go through life and it doesn't matter. But I happen to be one of those people. I'm sure. Constantly like, okay, how do I show it better?
So let's get into that a little bit here then, because I think the two big questions in my head are, okay, we're seeing optimism, we're seeing mindset, we're seeing acceptance, we're seeing perspective taking. I think there's performance elements here in addition to well-being elements and resilience elements. We can get into all of that. I want to ask how to questions, or at least how you go about it, even if that's not the way everybody else should. And then I want to dig into a little bit more like how these experiences and your learnings, both sort of, you know, in terms of formal education, if you will, but also just lived experience, inform parenting, right? And how you think about trying to help your son. Let's start with the former, the how-to pieces. when we talk about anti-fragility, we try to break it down into three buckets to simplify it for folks. So you got bucket one, well-being. This is like, how do you actively, strategically, consciously build the good? Okay. Or the pleasant, if you will. There's resilience. So maybe as a child, maybe when you were in prison, maybe when you started up Saprix, right? Maybe when you thought you might go out of business, maybe when you had your son, like how do you go about dealing with adversity? Or is it just natural for you? Like, I'm curious, do you have mechanisms, tools, ways of thinking? And then the third bucket is performance. This could be systems, routines, you know, habits, all those sorts of things that I think you've spoken to a couple different times now. And of course, these three are synergistic. But when you talk about like doing the work to stay on top of me, right, and to be that sort of like take on hard things, be that sort of anti-fragile self, to us that we think that means well-being, deal with the adversity, perform ideally pretty well day to day. What's that look like for you?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, well-being is, I think, the foundation, right? And well-being for me would break out into physical vitality, right? I know I spoke earlier about alcohol, drugs, super prone to addiction. I mean, easy for me to just drop into something and be like, well, if we're going to have one beer, we might as well have six, right? I mean, what the hell? And so I really curtail most of that. I find diet affects me. I mean, I'm super tuned in. Every doctor I've worked with in the last decade is like you really feel your body. Like, you know, I know what's going on. I can tell you what my blood sugar is pretty much without testing blood sugar, because I just know I can tell you how my body feels. That's taken a lot of work, but that's the key. I noticed, I mean, over the holidays, mom made Christmas cookies. And I, of course, feel obligated to eat some Christmas cookies. Mom's been making them for 50 years now, right?
Only out of obligation, of course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I mean, one's good, you know, 10 are better. You know? And I don't feel well. And so that all that stuff is, you know, you talk about resilience and honing. That's every day, right? It's not the bad times, right? Because a lot of us would much rather eat a pepperoni pizza, drink a beer, and eat some cookies than eat a big salad, get a good workout, go to bed early, sit in the sauna, do the cold tub.
Hi friends, Nick here with just a brief interlude to share with you an update on one of our newest partnerships with the Anti-Fragile Academy. Throughout John and I's conversations with many, if not most, of our guests, one thing has been made really clear. In order for people to flourish, thrive, experience the good life, they need to develop the capacity to not only navigate and endure, but ideally grow from the bad, grow from unpleasant experiences. That's why we're thrilled to be partnering with our newest sponsor, the Anti-Fragile Academy, an organization that I co-founded with Dr. Adam Wright, Director of Mental Performance for the Washington Nationals. At the Anti-Fragile Academy, we work with adolescent athletes, executives, and educators to help them understand some of the science, not just of optimal performance, but of well-being and anti-fragility. The ability not only to endure and bounce back from unpleasantness, but to actually come back stronger, to grow from it. Between Adam and I, we've worked with Fortune 100 companies, Inc. 300 executives, Division I programs, and elite professional athletes and Olympians from all over the world. To find out more about how you can leverage anti-fragility training, check out our website at theantifragileacademy.com. Part of your well-being is being resilient to the distress of doing the boring shit.
It's choosing my hard, right?
There you go. Choosing your hard. Yeah.
I'm choosing my hard, right? Because if I eat the cookies, tomorrow's going to be hard, right? And if I don't eat the cookies, today is going to be hard. But the opportunity to be great tomorrow is going to be there, right? If I eat the cookies today, tomorrow's probably going to suck because I'm not going to feel well, which means I'm not showing up well. Right. And so I think you're honing that all the time. You know, I think all of us, I imagine, I can speak for myself, I have lots of things, obstacles that would love to derail me on a daily basis. And it's work to do that. Right. So I choose my hard. Right. And if I choose my heart well, in a month I look in the mirror and I like what I see and I feel great and I show up better. And when the bad day comes, because the situation's bad, I can handle it well, right? Because
you've practiced hard.
I've just chosen hard.
Over and over.
Life is hard, right? It's hard one way or the other. You get to choose the hard, you know, I mean, it's how many sayings are there, right? About that, about if you do what's hard today, tomorrow will be easy, right? If you do it's easy today, tomorrow will be hard. You got to choose the hard, right? And so pick them really smartly. And you and I've talked about this, you know, when you're around 50, all of a sudden you start to see, I see it in my friends, right? You see this huge divergence, right? You see, haven't taken care of yourself for 50 years, have taken care of yourself pretty well. And you see people just make now kind of all that cumulative stuff starts to add up, right? So you see somebody who's 60 and you go, wow, they look really great. And I mean, I meet people today that are younger than me and I'm like, really? Mm-hmm. You're 55? Sure. You know, and you're just like, wow, I don't mean to be mean, but I'm like that. So I think the self-care is huge. For me, it's a journal every day. I ask lots of questions. Every time somebody asks a great question, I either write it down on my phone, write it down in my journal. But, you know, I always love to go back and ponder great questions. Like, how do I answer that? Where am I at? Where am I at with that? I think this journal I'm working on now, I think I'm up to 100. I write them in the front of the journal. Like, all the great questions, I answer them, but then I keep a list of them. You know, I think I have 128 questions, right? That I've been like, huh, that's a really good question. And so I work every day on appreciation. So in my three things on appreciation, what do I appreciate about me, right? Self-love. What do I appreciate about my progress? Where have I come from? Because often I have to remind myself, you know, how far I've come. And not just in wealth or success or even little things like this conversation. You know, I'm often remind myself that, wow, I've done a lot of work to get here and be here and enjoy this day. And then something, you know, that I enjoy about the present moment. And I do that every morning and every night, almost every day. And I find it's phenomenal, right? I can get up at 6 in the morning and all I got to do is do that. And then, you know, ask myself, what am I going to do today? What am I going to do today with where I'm at, with what I got to elevate my experience? And I'm like, okay, I'm going to go work out. Right. So then I go work out and I listen to something motivating and all of a sudden it's, you know, it's 8 o'clock in the morning and I'm jacked up and I'm in a good place. Right? And if I don't do that stuff, and then I'm going to eat better and I'm going to do that. So lots of people talk about it. For me, it's let's get out of bed and do some things that get us situated well. And the rest of the day follows better. And I think even I journal a few minutes every night. And I know I have to check in with myself tonight and I'm going to ask myself how I do today and kind of keep some guardrails on myself. So I think that's a big piece. I think if you're going through something tough, for me, journaling is amazing, right? Because I get a
And even if you're not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you get a non-judgmental space, yep. Right? Of just thing. And the more I can kind of work through that, the more I can think about it. The questions start to linger in my brain later. Perfect, right? I meditate most days. So, you know, I do lots of things health-wise. I think that's big, right?
Yeah. Can I highlight something with the resilience piece? Because sure. I think you, and I don't even know that you necessarily intended it, but I think you also gave us an interesting bridge at some point to talking about the parenting lens. Because I think what you've raised is so far, when we've talked about adversity or resilience, we've brought up moments in life, particularly in your life, that, you know, I don't know how you would label them, but I think some people would label them trauma. And
I think trauma is your experience to the situation, right? The situation is what it is, right? Trauma is your experience, how you've experienced it. But
here's a way I'll ask this, right? Is like you sure. learned clearly valuable lessons and systems, routines, ways of being, mindset as a result of these, whatever we want to label them as, really, really difficult circumstances, mm-hmm. right? And I know you to be a wildly committed, loving, supportive father, right?
Well, thank you.
Yep. That
you could say that again if you want. No,
I'm just sure. Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to C. Yeah. Know how good you have it, bud. But I don't think you would ever wish what you had to experience onto your son. And there are lessons to be learned that are really, really valuable. How do we take those lessons out of these really potentially tragic events and maybe intentionally insert them into less intense, maybe less tragic, maybe less detrimental? I don't know. Maybe you wouldn't even call some of your experiences that, but I think you see what I'm trying to get at. How do you create those sorts of experiences for somebody you love and care about and are trying to mentor and guide, but maybe in safer ways, if that's the right terminology?
Yeah, sure. Well, before we got on air, you know, you and I were talking about the break. And so my son came home and one evening he said, and then I won't give details for his sake, but he said he was going to do something, right? And I looked at him and I said, really, do you think that's a good idea? And he goes, what do you mean? No one will know. And I stopped him right there and I said, whoa, 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 whoa. And I said, but you're going to wake up tomorrow morning. And if you do that thing, I said, you're going to know it. And that's going to put you in a situation where you're going to have to lie. And that's not a good situation. And I said, is that really where you want to be? You've worked this hard to get where you are, build this social life, do all these things. And I said, you really, that's what you did because you think nobody will know, but you'll know. And I said, just think about that. Because I'm going to give you my advice unsolicited. I said, I wouldn't do it. And so I left it, right? I go to bed, you know, he's the typical 18-year-old. He's up till what a God knows, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, I'm getting up 2 hours later. And, you know, when he finally got up, I said, so what happened? And he goes, I didn't do it. And I go, and how do we feel about that? And he goes, yeah, good. It was a much better decision. You know, like it feels better today. So my parenting has mostly been hands off, right? Go stumble. I'm not a helicopter parent. I never was. The best advice we ever got, I think, was a school he was in, middle school, fifth grade. They sat us down at the beginning of middle school and they say, so here's the goal, 3 years of middle school. Right now, most of you are helicopter parenting. And I was it, right? I was absolutely that. I checked the homework, checked the grades. Did you do your assignment? You know, Bob, let me spoon feed you. And they said, by seventh grade, you shouldn't be doing any of that. Nothing. And I was like, okay, like that makes sense to me, right? Like, how am I going to send a kid off into the world if I'm running behind him all the time to do everything, you know? So I did.
Sure.
By sixth grade, we were already there. By seventh grade, we're fully in it. Through high school, I could count on, you know, one hand the number of times I ever checked into the school system on grades. And, you know, all I said was, this is what you got to do. When I sent him off to college, I said, here's the deal, brother. I said, I need a 3.0, I'll pay next semester. No 3.0, not paying. You're welcome to go back to school, but you figure out how to pay for it. You know, that's it. I'm not negotiating. Don't come to me with a 2.98 and say we were close. No close, 3.0, or you're out. I think the greatest piece of advice somebody said to me is our job is to build some guardrails, right? I mean, at some point during the teenage years, the guardrails are just keep them alive, right? Because they're literally...
You can crash into guardrails.
Yeah, yeah. You can crash into guardrails. Yeah, they crash into, but keep them alive. Don't let them flip off the cliff, right? Because there are definitely moments, you know, when they go out for the first time or they stay out, you know, the sleepover when they're 17 and you're like, you know, that ain't, you've been there, right? You know, that ain't, right? But to answer your question most, it was how I lived my life. The greatest thing you do as a parent is set the example, right? I would talk sometimes ad nauseum about the work I was doing, the things I was thinking, the events I was going to. He was there when I was doing a lot of stuff with Tony Robbins. When I had some huge intervention with Tony Robbins, I shared it with him.
You shared with him your time in prison. You've been very candid and honest with him.
Very candid. I mean, I've answered more questions and they come out of the blue on some, you know, car drive or some, what about this or what about that? Or I've shared with him my drug use. I've shared with him, there's my intimate life over the years. When he asks a question, he gets an answer. Sometimes he doesn't like it. He's like, sure. Oh my God, why did you tell me that? I'm like, you just asked the question. But I think what I've seen from him coming back to me is he sees what can be done. I'm not saying I raised any stretch of the means a perfect kid, but I think all we can do is let them stumble as much as we can while we have them in our house, while we have some pretty good guardrails. Let them go, you know? I think I see way too many parents who are like, I need this. I need you to go to this school. I need you to behave like this. But those are the kids that behind their back typically are the most out of control, right? I let mine go and I let them do some stuff that was hard for me. I mean, really hard for me to go, okay.
That itself is distress tolerance for you, right?
Yeah. Oh, God. That's the hardest thing. I'll put myself, I'd rather burn my hand than watch my kid's hand get burned. You know, like I'll put it in the fire. But you let that go and that's all you can do, right? I mean, you let them know there are tools. I mean, you and I have talked about this years ago. I was shocked in my 40s and early 50s at some of the things I read. Why didn't anybody ever tell me this? Why didn't anybody ever, you know, I never, you know, what do you mean? I can control what I think. Okay. He's not going into this life without knowledge, or at least some knowledge and some example of what to do, as well as the struggles. You know, I never, when I was having a shitty day, I would tell him I'm having a shitty day and it's okay. Right. Because, you know, that's the other piece. If you live your life and pretend it's always great, then when they have a bad day, they're afraid to say so. That's bad.
This is so good. I just want to name some of it. I hear educate, give tools, give skill sets, give ideas.
Mostly demonstrate ideas, right?
Well, so then I was going to say set examples.
Set examples, yeah.
Share how you're doing it, why you're doing it, what you're dealing with. You seem to be an open book, right? And vice versa. And then set guardrails, right? Maybe even structure some challenges within that, but always with those guardrails in mind. So they're seeing how you take on difficult things. They're getting education and ideas and thoughts and pushback or devil's advocate, right, around how to deal with those things. And then there's also some guardrails in place so that those difficult or distressful things don't create tectonic shifts that can't be undone, maybe, or whatever that might be.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I think I joked before, you know, it's like a mother bird, right? You teach them to fly, right? But at one point you got to kick them out, right? And sometimes some of them make it a little and some of them, then you pick them up and you bring them back. But one day they're going to fly away, right?
Sure.
And you can only hope that you taught them how to find food and how to stay away from the bigger bird, right? And that's hard, right? That's the gift of parenting, I think. I think if you do it, not even right, if you just do it and you realize you can't control everything, if he were to end up in prison, I did what I could do, right? I mean, that's all I can do. There's no point in kicking yourself or, yeah, I think that's it, you know? And I think you just continue to ask those questions, you know, like over the break. I could have let that thing pass. And I was like, let's not let that pass. This is a good time, right? And it wasn't to say, you're wrong, don't do that. It was like, dude, tomorrow when you wake up, or a month from now when you wake up, are you still going to think that was a good idea? Oh, yeah, maybe not, right? Those are the lessons, right?
There's more coaching and teaching than ordering and leading.
Yeah, look, I never made him make his bed. I mean, I know parents who say, you got to make him make their bed every day. I never made him make his bed. You want to live in that pigsty? Close the door. I don't care, right? I mean, my dad made me make the bed every day, right? The Navy made me make the bed every day. The prison system made me make the bed every day. And as soon as I was done with the prison system, I didn't make my bed for 20 years, right? I was like, I didn't teach you anything, right? All it taught me was I don't like to be told what to do. Now I make my bed every day, right? But that was all about learning a habit. It's a fascinating exercise, right? I mean, you know this one, but I mean, to listeners who, I forget, I think it was Admiral McCourty that said this, right? That said, you know, make your bed every day. But what's fascinating about the habit, make your bed every day for a few months if you're not a bed maker. Pick something easy in your life that you don't do today, right? And you don't even have to care about it, right? You just go, but pick something really simple and do it for 3 months every day. Just make yourself do it, right? I can't leave the house without making this bed. I just can't do it, right? Like the bed has to be made. And it reminds me every day of the power that we can change, right? Because I just think about it all the time. I hated making my bed, right? It was a revolt. And it's like, okay, if I just keep doing something, journal, like I hate missing a day of journaling, right? I mean, if I there are a few days once in a while when I just don't get it in, but I hate it, right? And so this habit of resilience to me is a lot of times is just building those little small things that when the bad day comes, you've got all those habits in place, right? And so even with the kids, I think if you can start to help them just build little habits, right? The little habits that ground you in the storm,
yeah. Right? Well, so this is the connection that I wanted to make earlier. I'm glad you brought us back to it, because when you made a comment somewhere along the lines of resilience is in like kind of the little things, moment by moment, day by day, you know, the connection that I made is to concepts like willpower or discipline, distraction, procrastination, right? Kind of bringing us back to that performance bucket. And there is an argument to everything we've talked about today is in some way, shape, or form, some distress tolerance, right? And there are different theories, right, and models in terms of like what discipline or self-regulation or willpower is, but they almost always include some level of distress tolerance, like doing the thing that feels boring, right? Engaging with the thing that doesn't seem very interesting, walking into things that are a little scary, whatever it might be, right? Mm-hmm. Habits, right, or creating these habits, I think oftentimes can help sort of like circumvent that or short circuit it and get us to a point where we've moved past how we feel about it and we're just doing it habitually, which is what a habit is by definition, right? Automatic mm-hmm. processing. So do you integrate any of that with the way sort of you parent as well, where it's sort of like, hey, these are all opportunities to kind of chisel yourself, if you will, right? To mm-hmm. be disciplined, to be willpower, and then let it go and see where it happens. But do you educate him on that?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I mean, you know one really well, right? Like my son is a naturally gifted golfer. Naturally gifted, right? I mean, some amazing pros have watched him swing the club and go, the kid is natural, right? He goes out and he doesn't pick up a club for months and he goes out and plays scratch golf. Like legitimate, you know, you're like, I mean, most people slave over this in a lifetime, right?
Yes.
But he had the chance, right? He had the chance to probably go play D1 college. He didn't want to put the work in. It wasn't his thing, right? He didn't. And so my perspective on that one was like, okay, I can't make you do this, right? Because I don't think mm-hmm. if you I make you do this. But I did, I mean, I hooked him up with people like you, right? And I said, you know, maybe we'll see what happens. And it just didn't happen, right? He didn't want to do it. But I also sat down and I go, here is a great place for a life lesson. I go, let me tell you what's going to happen, Colin. One day, someday, you're going to be wake up or you're going to be sitting in that cubicle or you're going to be doing something and you're going to go, huh, I wonder what would have happened if I had dug in and done that.
Hmm.
Right?
Doesn't mean you'll regret it, but you're probably going to ask the question.
You probably will regret it, right? You're probably going to question, like, what if my life, you see, the next Tiger Woods and the gorgeous wife and the beautiful car and everybody wants your autograph and you're gonna be like, ah. And so I've used that a lot, just that one, right? And I said, okay, one day you're gonna wake up, good or bad. I use that over the break. In a month, you're gonna wake up and look back at the decision you made tonight. What are you gonna think, right?
Choose your hard.
And I've tried to integrate things with him without ever saying it, right? What's the lesson, right? Project forward. Think about waking up a month from now, a year from now, a decade from now. And if you make this decision or you do this or you become this person, what are you going to think, right? How's that going to feel? You think you're going to like that? You think you might question that? Are you okay with that? So I've sort of played behind the curtains a lot. How do I let him learn this thing? Or how do I let him see this thing? You know, sometimes I share my struggles and he's sort of paying attention, but then all of a sudden, 6 months later, he'll say something. And I'm like, oh, you were paying attention. Like it's his now, right? He thought of this. It's his thing. And I think that's a big thing with kids, right? It ain't this make your bed thing. Maybe that's effective. I don't know, right? But start to teach them, you know, even working out. Like I taught him, you know, I said, you work out for enough months and you'll always go back to it. You might take some stretches off, but you'll always go back to it, right? And that's what he does, right? Now he goes back to it. It's kind of ingrained. He's learned that.
Yeah.
I think that's the big thing with kids. I think the best parenting is having a great structure that you want them to kind of understand and presenting it in a way that is not educational, right? That is almost by haphazard, like, oh yeah, you know, I do this thing, you know, and then they see it or asking a question and just leaving it, right? I don't need an answer, but how are you going to feel about that next week? You get through a couple of those and all of a sudden they start to get it, right? I mean, that's kind of, I think it's the same way with us, right? We read, I mean, I've read how many books and read how many great ideas and how few of them have stuck, right? But some do. They seem to be enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a good segue into our final question, and we'll start to wrap up here. You know, we usually have what we kind of call the flourishing question. We're talking a little bit more in this, you know, series on anti-fragility. And, you know, there's a lot of different things that you do and think about and have experienced that I think have crafted your current day self. What I'm going to ask you to do is to try to say, like, if you're talking to a listener, you're talking to a kid, say around your son's age, whatever it might be, what do you think is most foundational, most central, not asking you to speak for everybody, but for you personally, right, to your ability to kind of thrive in difficult circumstances, take on those big things, and how might they leverage that or get started on it if they never have?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, I think we talked about it, and I think it always goes back to your experience is not the situation, right? The biggest perspective, I think, that changes everything is if you look at any situation and say, my experience is my choice, right? Because there's almost no experience or no situation that you can't find an example of somebody who thrived and somebody who came apart, right? Became the ultimate victim, right? Almost anything, right? I mean, you can show me the worst upbringing in the world. I mean, people who are sex trafficked, who come out of it and thrive and are amazing human beings and loving their life, right? And you can show me people who have trust funds, who everything at their feet are train wrecks and kill themselves, right? So I think that's the start. Always remind yourself. And for me, it's journaling, right? I would say, get a journal. That's always my first piece, right? And who am I being? Start to just, who are you being? When I started that exercise 8 years ago, I had no idea how to answer the question, right? And I surely wasn't being honest. So just continually, how do I show up, right? Then I started to work through my journal with rules. What are my rules, right? Well, we all have a ton of rules. Most of us have no idea what our rules are. Right? We're just sort of living unconsciously. They're all unconscious rules, right? So as you start to bring your rules to the surface, just pick a few, right? Let's pick an easy one. I'm going to tell the truth. Now let's critique ourselves. How often do we tell the truth? How often do we, gray. Oh, gray is okay. And I'm not judging gray or not, right? I mean, but start to do that, right? Then I started to define myself, right? Then I worked on identity, you know, and I said, okay, like, who am I? Like, really? And that's a huge exercise, right? And so I think it's a progression. But I think for me, it's really be super clear. The situation doesn't have to define your experience. Who you're being defines the experience, right? I've heard a lot of people talk about who you become. Forget who you become, right? Who are you being today, right? Own it, right? Maybe who do you want to become tomorrow? When you're honest about who you're being. And so I just constantly play that game with myself.
Sure.
And regardless of the easy or hard day, if I'm honest about that, I'm getting through them, right? There's no, you know, I mean, people hear my background and they often say, oh, of course. But that's sort of the right, I think, regardless of where you come from, you know, whether you've got a trust fund or you know, I'll just use the sex trafficked person, right? I mean, kind of, opposite ends of the extreme, you can define your experience, right? But it's who you're being, right? Goes all the way back to what I said in the beginning, right? When we take our last breath, I think if we can honestly say we were a good person, right? We knew ourselves, we did the right thing. It doesn't really matter what we got. But if you do that well, it's a good life.
Great. Yeah. Good stuff. the listeners can get, I think, a lot more of the detail of your story, which I think is awesome and really rich, plus a lot more of your thoughts, I think, on performance and optimization and all sorts of different topics via your book. I'd love for you to mention it and just give a shout out to where people can connect with you.
The book is Chasm. It's my first book. I can get it on Amazon. So Bob Goulet, title's Chasm. I'm working on a second book. Hold tight for that.
Are you? That's news to me.
Yeah, news. Well, sort of news to me too, but not really. You know, that the book's real funny because real quick, you write a book and then as soon as it's published, you realize, oh, I don't know if I still agree with that or this or that. So you pretty much have to start writing a second book. BobGoulet.com is the website. So you can kind of more information there. And you can email me if you've got a question, bob@bobgoulet.com. And on LinkedIn, you can find me at Bob J. Goulet. If you want to reach out, feel free to.
Awesome. This is a really great conversation, Bob. I knew it would be. Appreciate your time and your thoughts and reflections and insights.
Thanks, my friend. Have a great day.
Thanks so much for listening to Flourish FM. We hope you enjoyed the content. Please be sure to leave us a 5-star review and hit that subscribe button wherever you listen to your podcast and on all major social media platforms.
And if you visit our website, flourishfmpodcast.com, you can sign up to our newsletter. We send out a weekly newsletter. First newsletter of every month, we share a long form blog. And every newsletter, every week, we share highlights from our previous episodes. Please hit subscribe on our website.